On today's episode, we talk to Kate Vosti, a somatic movement facilitator. She's going to talk to us on how to move out the grief.
How to shake it loose. And she's from Hawaii. Aloha, everyone. Come listen in.
Let's talk about death, baby. Let's talk about grief and mourning. Is it argumental or existential? What's it mean to me? Let's talk about death.
Hi, I'm Benny Kapal, and I'm a funeral professional.
And I'm Nicholas Kapal, a psychologist.
Hey, Nick, let's talk about death.
Let's do it.
Okay, Doc, today we have Kate, and if I mess up this last name, I apologize. Vosti. Am I good?
Got it.
Perfect. And you are a somatic movement facilitator. So let's talk a little about that. Let's get our chakras open.
Ooh, open
let's get everything going. Let's open our third eyes. Mm-hmm. Let's get into a safe.
Thin the veil.
Let's get into a safe environment. All jokes aside, let's calm ourselves. Let's center ourselves. Okay, now, Doc, I'm excited. Kate, you have first and foremost. I know you listeners can't see this, but Kate has a very huge smile, very awesome personality. I can tell that chakra is open. So let's go into this, Kate. So give us a little bit about you, what you're all about when it comes to grief. Okay, give us the 411.
I'm going to say this without laughing too hard. My gosh. Okay. So where to begin? Well, so first things first, I love that you guys kind of went into the spiritual, chakra when you introduced me with somatic movement facilitator. I will have you know, I've been to 2 master's programs. So this work is actually grounded much more in academia than it is in kind of this new age spirituality. So I am very proud to say that this work is grounded in lots of research, lots of science, and it's not quite as woo-woo, but we're not, when I say
wait a minute, hold on, pause, woo-woo.
Can you define woo-woo, please, for us?
Oh, okay. So the word woo-woo is just kind of a term that I feel like a lot of people use for things that are just so spiritually out there. Wow,
hippie?
That's really woo-woo.
Why do we have to bring the hippies into this? That was very, wow. I didn't know. Sorry,
you just got to make that whistle go. Woo-woo.
Sorry, I did not know Doc Nick was going after the hippies today. You are wonderful hippies out there.
But that's what I always
okay,
hear.
Okay, so let's get back to Kate with the woo-woos, the whistle blows, the train whistle woo-woos. Woo-woo. Okay, Kate, go ahead.
Yes.
So I'm dealing with grief. I'm having a struggle with it. How do you help me get through this or channel my grief in a more positive environment?
Yes. Well, okay. I kind of want to answer that by going a little bit into the backstory of how did I arrive doing this work? And I love watching you guys both sit back, ready to listen.
We've been doing this a couple times now, so we know this is a story time.
I'll give her the floor. Okay. So my journey with grief, it has been 5 years ago, so 2017. My dad was going through chemo. We were best friends. I'm an only child, kindred spirits. And I moved home. This was after my first master's in leadership studies. I moved home to San Francisco, where my family is. And I took care of him for 6 months through chemo, which is just such a gruesome process. He had melanoma cancer. So in that 6 month time period, towards the end in October 2017, we had a home in Napa, and my parents found the land, they got married on it, my dad built the home, the whole thing. It burned down in the 2017 Napa fires, and then my dad died from cancer 11 days later. And so it was this, what I like to call the apocalypse. It was this apocalyptic time period where it was surreal. So I had just left this master's program, leadership. I was, very into, I was teaching compassion education, leadership. I was traveling to Asia, working with Buddhist nuns. And that's all going to make sense in a moment. And so I kind of thought I had had an idea of like, okay, this is what I want to do. Leadership, compassion, like this is, you know, this is great. I got it. When you go through this loss like this, that just kind of pulls the rug out from under you. You're like, okay, like slate wiped clean. I have no idea. Not only what do I want to do, but what the heck is the meaning of life, right? We get into this place, especially with death, it really holds this mirror up to like, what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose? Like, what are we doing this all for? And I grew up a ballet dancer. I've done almost every type of dance. And I remember, so going through this period, the fire, the death, going into this fog of grief. You know, we all remember the fog of grief, right? And where everything is surreal, we're kind of in this other reality. And we were in San Francisco, and I remember seeing this advertisement for this day-long workshop where you can just come and move to a live celloist and do some art therapy. And I saw that, and I was like, okay, well, I've never done kind of authentic, like, free movement before. I've only done, like, technical dance. But I was like, this sounds good. So I did it, and at the time, I was in talk therapy with a grief counselor. But I remember going through this program, this day-long workshop with a cello, right? A cello is just such an evocative instrument. And at the end of the day, I was like, you know what? I processed more of my grief in this one day than I have in months of talk therapy. And that's when I said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to help people move through grief. Because it became so clear to me that the mind has a very difficult time processing loss, right? How can it be that someone is here and then they're just not? Like, it does not make sense. So that's when I went and I looked up another master's degree in psychosomatic therapy and dance movement therapy in Colorado. And so that's when I moved to Colorado and I did the dance movement therapy thing. So I was like, okay, I want to help people to process grief through the body because it's such a somatic. And for those who don't know the term somatic, soma just means the word body and in Greek. And so it's bringing the body's extraordinary intelligence into the therapeutic conversation, right? Because when we have like a talk therapy session, we're just sitting there, we're talking about our feelings, we're talking about our childhood, we're talking about this and that, but we're not really addressing the fact that our entire nervous system, right? Our entire nervous system is all the way up and down here. And that all experienced and went through the trauma just as much as the brain did. And so what happens is when there's kind of a like a really big gigabyte file that the brain cannot process, it gets stored in the body. And so we have all these emotions, which is just energy, emotions, stored in different parts of the body. And it speaks through sensation. The body's language is sensation. We're just not taught to speak with our bodies and communicate with our bodies. So grief invites this incredible way to process loss, not conceptually, because it doesn't make sense conceptually, but somatically through the body.
We're back here. We came back up from our seats for the listeners out there.
Yes, I noticed.
One thing I have to say, isn't that basically, and I'm not trying to plug the book, but isn't that The Body Keeps the Score? Isn't that all about the idea where we ourselves don't realize that we get so caught up in trying to get all these emotions out of our brain, but we don't realize that a lot of it goes to our gut or into our immune system whatnot or everything into. So what's interesting, and obviously this makes sense, that movement would help because, as we know, exercise helps with any mental incapacity because it helps the endorphins and it helps that going on. So that makes sense. Plus, I'm sure you would say this as being primal, our primal instincts are to move, are to dance, right? That's what generations of dancing. And that's interesting that you said that you have been a ballet dancer, you've done all these, strict guidelined dances, right? Which is great. But it was cool that you said it took this one where there wasn't any rules, right? It's the Wild Wild West. There's anarchy in the dance floor, right? You got a cello. You got cellos going on. There's cello music. There's a lot of strings and things going on. And you found... And I think that's true. And I think that goes with what Doc and Nick have talked about on the podcast, is everybody deals with grief so differently. And I think for some people like me and Doc, Nick ourselves, we're music. Everything revolves around music. So music makes sense. It looks like Doc, Nick wants to say something. Doc, go for it.
Oh, no, no. I was just Vanderkolt. Vanderkolt?
Did you say Vanderkolt?
Vanderkolt. I think that's the research that wrote The Body Holds the Score.
It's right? A great book.
But what I was interested in is the logo therapy, you know, the idea of meaning making, right? When grief happens, we are stuck in this very existential dilemma of like, I thought I had everything planned. I thought I knew what I wanted to do. I thought I knew who I was. And then you lose that person that you love so much that, you know, you called kindred souls, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is that I think at that moment, a lot of people get their blinders taken off, right? And it's like, now what? You know, like all this stuff I've spent so much time in getting, you know, going through school and working a job for 10, 15 years. And now I'm like, I don't even know if I like this, right? And I think that's the thing, right? Death, when, you know, I've always said to clients, which is, it's a weird statement, and I know it always hits weird at first when they hear it, but I always say death is beautiful. Because with death, death opens our eyes to different experiences. Without it, we don't understand who we are.
What's really important, I think that's the big thing that death always kind of like shoves to the forefront, is like what's really important. Now, Kate, before we go on more with asking you questions, I want to take a second. Can you tell us your dad's name?
Larry or Lawrence.
Lawrence. I just want to give this episode to Larry out there, Lawrence. This is absolutely wonderful. And to be honest, you wouldn't be on this podcast if Lawrence didn't pass away.
Oh.
Because it took that situation. Yeah. So tell us how you do this. So you figure you want to do this. How do you put it into practice?
Yes. Okay. So, let's see. I'm also kind of translating it, because usually I work mostly with women. I will admit that I work mostly with women, and I'm looking at you guys. I'm like, all right, this is kind of like a nice creative challenge to be like, all right, how do I explain this? That's not so much in the feelings, right? That's not.
No,
so
bring
much
out the feelings. We can have feelings. Come on.
Are you saying that men are generally not good with feelings?
Hold on. No,
the attack started with the hippies from Dr. Nick. Now it's moving on.
She threw it back my way.
I'm just I'm keeping the score in my body right now is what I'm doing.
It's your stiffness.
Did you feel it?
Relax.
Do you see me over here?
Relax.
Okay, I'm going to move them. I'm going to move them a little bit here.
Wow.
All right, Kate, go ahead. I'm sorry. We keep interrupting you.
All right, let's get into the feelings then. Let's go. So essentially, the invitation is to not go so much into the emotional feeling, but the invitation is to really go into the sensorial feeling. And so this is where my work that, well, I will say I have been referring to as non-sexual sensuality, but I am also kind of moving it into a body of work that I'm now calling kinetic body alchemy. And
before you get into that, can you explain to the listeners why it's non-sex, or why you had to put in the non-sexual part of it? Just to clarify.
Totally. So going through these phases, right? So I've actually had 5 spine surgeries for scoliosis. So I've had my whole own like history of like grief and with health issues and reoccurring and things like that. So whether it be health issues, whether it be death, whether it be a natural disaster, whether it be just a big life transition or breakup or divorce, whatever it is, or of course, as I'm getting to, you know, some kind of assault, we go through periods in our life where we are sexually unavailable. And we don't really talk about that a lot, especially if you're on Instagram and there's, you know, kind of the bombardment of these sexual empowerment coaches and influencers, and which is all great and has its place, but there is a missing piece of the conversation. And so when I was in my psychosomatic therapy program, I worked with women who are survivors of sexual assault. And I personally was going through a period in my life where I was in a 2-year celibacy. And it was then that I realized, with working with them, going through my own experience, I'm like, you know what? Being sexually available is a privilege. And this is something, and it's not just for women, right? Men go through this too. And it is, and I work with a lot of men who experience, you know, these things around performance, right? Pressures around performance. And so this gets to be a conversation that's not really about sex, but it's really about understanding our bodies, our boundaries. And the reason why this connects to grief is because, you know, grief is more than just death, right? I mean, we're here, we're talking about death and everything like that, but grief is more than death. Grief can be so many, everything I just listed involves grief. And when we are going through these periods of grief in whatever it's for, we tend to not necessarily be very sexually available, right? And so I was going through one of those periods, and I was feeling myself though with, and actually quarantine had just happened. So this was 2020. Quarantine just happened. I was, you know, everyone was trying to process what the heck was going on in their own way. And I started to feel into like, okay, you know what? Sexuality isn't a part of my life right now, but I still feel so sensual. And I started to make this distinction in my own like quarantine bubble. I lived by myself. And so I was like in my quarantine place and, you know, and doing kind of what I do, and which is like a lot of work with, you know, just like movement and dance and all those things. And I'm like, okay, you know what? There's something else here around moving energy through our bodies, right? And that's where kinetic energy comes into play. But moving emotions, moving energy through our body in an intentional way, creating this sense of trust and safety within our bodies through touch, through breath, through movement, all these ways that we can activate feelings of pleasure sensorially that aren't inherently sexual. And why this is so important with grief is because, and I love that you mentioned kind of the chemicals of the body, because that's, I'm totally about those systems, is when we're in grief, our cortisol is very high, right? And so we're looking for ways to regulate our nervous systems. We're looking for ways, especially when loss happens and we feel this ground like rug pulled out from under us. And so our security feels very violated, right? It's this kind of like surreal. We don't really know, have a ground to stand on. So we want to connect to physical matter, to sensation, and use our body's senses and all the chemical reactions, you know, whether it's serotonin or dopamine or lowering cortisol, we want to, oxytocin, important one, all these different systems, we want to activate them through creating pleasurable sensations. Is that making sense?
It makes complete sense, and I can understand. It's interesting you brought up that for some, that's the sexual is not even a thought at that point, right?
There's this desire that comes in to feel, right? This desire to feel. And I think most people associate feeling with sex, right? And they're craving intimacy because grief is such a lonely, isolating experience. They're craving intimacy. And most of us kind of associate that with the act of sex. And that's why inviting in this, you know, wild concept of sensuality, of self-sensuality, being able to channel that energy and to stimulate within ourselves, give ourselves any type of pleasure, any type of connection. One of the things of sensuality I talk about is platonic sensuality, right? I found a community after my dad's death that just changed my life. And so creating these safe containers, these safe healing containers, these safe connections with others. But I think it really comes down to, this is why I really keep going back to like touch and movement, is because we want to feel something through the body. It always comes back to the body, whatever the body's doing it, and how to help us get more of those happy chemicals flowing again.
And yeah. if you go to the science, right, we're finding out so much about how important like gut health and all this others, you know, the problem is like we have to look at the whole system, you know, as a system. It's not just you know, the mind and then feeling, right? Or, you know, physical touch versus how you sense something, right? And I think that's the thing that we as therapists, right, we try definitely to get our clients to understand. It's not just one system. So if one system is haywire, the other system is probably struggling too, right?
Danger, danger, danger.
Something is
wrong. There's definitely
help,
robots
help,
in our
help,
bodies
right?
that are like, oh no. Okay. I want you to get into, so how do you do the classes or how do you do the work for people?
How do I do the work for people? So great, great question, because it's different for each depending on the situation. Like after this, on Wednesday nights, I go and I teach what is called sensual movement therapy, which is a class for women too, where we're basically moving our bodies and our hips. And it's just pretty much every guy's fantasy to just watch, but we're doing it therapeutically because we're actually moving stuck, you know, painful things through our bodies, and we're moving it through our wombs and our yonis. Yoni is just a Sanskrit term for vagina, you know, and we're opening up our throats. And so this is what people would be like, oh, wow, so woo-woo. But I'm approaching it from the psychosomatic point. So I'm guiding people through the movement. I'm inviting them to also feel into boundaries that were crossed in the body. You know, memories.
Taking back control, right? Yeah. That's what it is, right? Is owning.
How long are your classes? Or is that the right terminology for what you do? Is it a class? Is it a therapy session?
It's funny you say that. I started this with group programs. So I did virtual group programs, all virtual, because I started it during quarantine in 2020. Virtual group programs. And then I started to do virtual one-on-one clients. And then it started to evolve into in-person workshops, retreats. And then now I just moved to Oahu a few months ago, and I was invited to do a weekly hour-long class, which is funny. I've never done that before. It's always been in kind of these deep immersion containers, or it's been one-on-one. And so now I'm kind of doing this fun, like weekly hour-long class. And I would definitely say I'm keeping it at a pretty high level. So it's not like we're doing, you know, like maybe excavating the depths, but I like to say healing can be fun, right? We're doing this in a fun way. We're moving our bodies. And it's an invitation to women who are like, I have never done anything like this. And I've been doing it for a month now, and my classes are packed. Women love it because we are just dying for ways to give ourselves permission to freely move our bodies.
Do you do men's classes? Or you haven't had the opportunity yet?
I have done men and women together, but I haven't, or like a mixed class, but I have never done just men. And it's interesting. I have a lot of men reaching out to me. I do have male one-on-one clients, but I haven't done something just specifically for men, but I've been feeling really called to it because I get asked by genuine men. I do get invitations sometimes for men. You can feel there's like an ulterior motive. Fine, that's fine, whatever, like we're all human. But there's a handful of men that are really, they're here genuinely, you know, and they kind of like what I was speaking to before, things around performative, you know, things, or they understand somatic work, or they enjoy movement, and they're just like, I want to process this through my body.
Women aren't the only one that go through sexual trauma too. So, you know, that's the, and let's be honest, we're in a society where men aren't really allowed to talk about that, which is unfortunate. And hopefully that's something that we can change in the future.
Right.
But I think your work is fantastic. I think you keep doing what you're doing. If we can get better in touch with connecting the mind to the body, I think we will be better humans in general, and feel better. And with it, you brought up the pandemic, and you know, in my experience, and I would venture to say in your experience too, like everybody around is so anxious and so terrified and so worried, and the pandemic did so much more than just kill people. Right. And unfortunately, I say kill because I think we just got to be blunt about it. Like, it literally took innocent lives. And the thing is that we're dealing, you know, in my experience, like, we get teenagers that don't know how to communicate with one another and don't know how to communicate with their own bodies. And I think this is fantastic work. And I think if you could open it up to men, I think it would be the right men, and I'm going to put you, we know what we're talking about here, but I think there is such a calling for that, because a lot of men don't know how to connect to emotion in general, right? Because they work great, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You don't show emotions. You don't cry. Come on, what are you, a girl? Walk it off, right? All that stuff. And everybody listening is like, yeah, I heard that before. Yeah, it happens. It still exists. So keep doing you.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna tell you this right now. I think Doc, Nick, and I need a class. I think we need to open up a little bit more. We need to find a little more. But all jokes aside, anything that's bringing grief to the forefront, right? The idea that we're gonna talk about it and we're gonna move about it. We're gonna be comfortable about being uncomfortable. Right. Especially for a lot of these people who have not moved probably in years. Right. Especially if they're dealing with grief, they don't feel the happiness anymore in doing things. So if you can release that in a safe environment, that doesn't necessarily mean a one-on-one with a counselor or therapist. They're wonderful. But maybe for somebody, that's not what they need. They need something else, or tandem. A little bit of both. What if you could do both? Why don't, while she's teaching the class, you go into a one-on-one?
I'm going to be honest with you. I think it would be really distracting for both of us. because I think she would be trying to get the person to do stuff, and I would be trying to get them to think.
What
and it would
if
be the
you
opposite.
Did a one-on-one with Kate while she's trying to teach you how to move?
Oh, I'm telling you what. You know, just watching her, I am definitely not in shape for her class yet. I don't have to
I think I can handle it. I think I can handle it. Benny Kapal can handle the class, I think.
Session. you guys are so bad. I do want to clarify. So here. Okay, so bringing it back to grief specifically, because I know we can talk about like all kind of the yummy stuff, but we're here to talk about grief too. And so I do want to specify that. So I have a program called Calm Heart, which was inspired by the experience I had with my dad's death. And it's for men and women who are either preparing for the loss of a loved one or have lost a loved one and are looking for ways to move forward. And I created this 6-month container with everything that I wish I had had. And I do like to specify, so there, I don't actually include dance or sensuality or anything in this container, because I'm acutely aware, right, that we feel extraordinarily lethargic in that time period. It's this lethargy. It's just like, we're not even in control of it, right? It's just foggy. It's just lethargy. And so the class that I'm kind of describing to you, the work that I'm kind of doing, this all comes like at least a year later, you know, when we're kind of, I mean, everyone has a different timeline, but the work that I do, especially one-on-one, it's not necessarily dance. That's why I like to say it really is psychosomatic. So I am talking to you. We are going through, I'm asking you about different experiences in childhood. I'm asking you about different, you know, experiences. And I am inviting in a therapeutic conversation. We're just adding the sensation, oh, okay, when you talk about X, Y, and Z, notice where in your body you can sensorially feel that. Okay, yeah. Let's go into that area. Is there a color? Is there a texture? Is there a memory? Is there a symbol? Right? We go into kind of these more abstract things. So there, it's not as cognitive, it's not as cerebral what's happening, but there is the psychosomatic mind-body connection that's happening. And that's really the secret sauce, because if we're just talking, we're not addressing the body. If we're just moving our bodies, but we're not actually processing right. and making sense and integrating, then we're just moving our bodies. And so I really like to emphasize, it's got to be both simultaneously. And that's what all my clients call it, like accelerated healing.
Yeah. It's an integration, right? It's integrating both, right? Yeah. Both spectrums, art therapy with a little bit of CBT, right? I mean, whether we say we are CBT, DBT, all that stuff, you know what we're doing. If you're a therapist out there, you're like, yeah, I know what you're talking about, right? But like the important part about it is that are you able to do both? And I think that's beautiful work.
I think something that struck to me really what you said there is the work with somebody dealing with grief when they're going through it is definitely important, and after the post work, the aftercare. But I think what you said about the pre, you know, when people are dealing with anticipatory grief, that is huge. Because if we can start as a society training and educating people that it's that how to grieve and it's okay to grieve prior to a death, can you imagine the social tools that we would have to be able to not only communicate our emotions, but do it in such a healthy way?
And why it's so important to grieve. That's the biggest thing. Like the acceptance right. that we're all going to lose someone. We're all going to, that's the one thing we're all going to have to do. Right?
Right.
We're all going to lose
someone. So why don't we dance it out?
And talk about it. Dance, talk. Dance, talk.
Dance and talk about death. Cool. All right. Well, Kate, this conversation has been wonderful. Thank you for being on the show. How can people get a hold of you, or how can they see what you're doing, or if they have questions, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, great question. So everything, my business is all under the name Rhythm Rose. That's my brand name is Rhythm Rose. So rhythmrose.love is my website. My Instagram, rhythm.rose. And and you can find just different avenues to connect with me personally, whether it's Messenger or email on my website. I'm always happy to connect with people. We can hop on calls. I like to do complimentary calls, drop in and, you know, see how I can support you, because this work is extraordinarily effective for those that are ready to do it. So yeah, it's exciting.
Last question I have for you. How do you take care of yourself?
Well, energetic boundaries are a big thing, because I'm helping people move energy through their bodies. I always like to say I'm not doing Reiki. I'm not, you know, doing any energy into you, and I'm not absorbing any of your energy. So I think that's a really important thing, is you get super clear on that energy is moving out. You know, that energy is not going to affect you. You're not going to take that on. So I take care of myself that way. And then just like on a personal level, I love that you're bringing up the gut. I could nerd out about that all day. I'm very into gut detoxification, eating for grief. That's actually something I'm working on right now.
Ooh, yeah.
So it really is about detoxing your gut and getting everything working on in there, and then detoxing your body from anything energetic that is dysregulating you.
So very holistic approach for you and your health.
Yes.
Well, yet again, Kate, thank you so much for being on the show. Yes, we will accept the tickets to Hawaii whenever you want to send them.
Yes, we'll be waiting.
Absolutely. If you have any questions, listeners, about any of this conversation, or maybe you have thoughts on this, please get a hold of us at letstalkaboutdeathpod@gmail.com. Check out our socials. Check out our Spotify. Check out our Apples. Send us out. Facebook us. Instagram us out.
And whenever you start the death ballet class, let me know. I'll get my
we'll be the first
sneaks, my, what are
that's
they called
definitely
what are
not they? Called death sneaks. Death sneaks, that's what we wear. What are the ballet shoes called? The points
point shoes.
Point shoes. I said it. I did it. Yes. I did it. I knew it. I got to get that point. You got to break them in. I know that. I know that. It's a whole thing. So yet again, Kate, we got to get on this. Kate, thank you for being on. Check us out. Add us. Do all the likes. Subscribe. And if you are not talking about death,
then you are not living. Thank you so much.